Blog Talk Radio.
Blab, blab, blab. Oh, hey, darn that British lady. Gosh, darn her all the heck. Interrupting people in the studio, telling them how much time we have left until the show starts, by gosh. Drive that British woman out of here. I want to talk about things today, all kinds of things. What sort of things? Things to come? Needful things. Danger things. All kinds of things. The thing. Or thing. All kinds of things. Anything you want. Anything. Something. Let's talk about them today here on Erie House Radio, the film industry makes great use of the word thing. It's a general word, a noun of indeterminate substance. You know, what kind of thing is it? It keeps things vague, mysterious, and interesting. One of the earliest films to use the word thing in its title was Things to Come. It's really a prophetic story. The film was made in the 1930s, was released in 1936, and it starts out with a global war that begins in 1940. Sound familiar? Well, maybe not overly prophetic. There was a great deal of disturbance in Europe in 1936. It surely seemed we were headed for a world war at the time, and this movie sort of predicts the future in... It's a sort of a dystopian future in which civilization regresses. In fact, some of the citizens in the 60s and afterwards, from the viewpoint of this film, blame technology for the destruction of civilization. And gosh, just read Facebook for a while. Sometimes it seems like we are on the precipice of annihilation from each other. But that's what the film is about. There is a great reconstruction in the film, you know, where civilization rebuilds. But, it's kind of prophetic and very believable because of the nature of human beings. It was based on a novel by H.G. Wells. This movie starred Ralph Richardson, and it was... It was a good movie. You should see it. It's also public domain. I don't think a lot of horror hosts have shown this, but Things to Come, a 1936 classic. I believe it's public domain. More things. What's your favorite thing movie? Call us at 646-378-0264. And I do mean us. I'm sitting here with a very fat gray cat, my sidekick, as it were, here at the Erie House radio station, and we're talking about things, all kinds of things. Well, you can't, I guess, discuss this topic without one of the all-time greats, and that's the 1954 Thing from Another World, or simply known as The Thing. We've talked about it here before, but if you've never seen it, you really need to. It's the retelling of the short story Who Goes There. If you've seen the 1980s version with Kurt Russell, this one's completely different. Similar story, but a completely different look. I mean, it takes place in the Arctic, very much like the original, but the effects were far superior in the 80s movie, of course. And it's a great story about a creature that can take over living creatures by assimilating their cells and mimicking them. Jeez, I can't speech right. What's the matter with me? mimicking them and taking over their body and their life. It's a real good science fiction story with elements of horror. So you have to see The Thing. And gosh, how can we forget Thing from Addams Family? That's a great character. A lot of people don't know it, but Lurch, Ted Cassidy, was often the thing. Was often thing, rather. It was his hand that came out of the box in most of the shots. Not all. And you can sometimes tell that thing is left-handed, and other times he's right-handed. So he must have opposable thumbs, or an opposable thumb. But that's a little trivia about the Addams Family and Thing. Thing was so handy, pun intended, always helpful to the Addams Family, delivering the mail, assisting Lurch with giving people their hat and cane back on their way out of the house when they're totally frightened and being escorted by Lurch out the door. So, yay Thing. Everybody needs a Thing. I would like to have a Thing. Well, not one of those things. I have one of those things. But I mean Thing, a hand in a box. That would be handy. Again, cheesy pun. One of my guilty pleasures is reading Stephen King novels. And a movie rendition of one of his novels starred Max von Sydow as Leland Gaunt in a film called Needful Things. And in Needful Things, the shop owner basically sold you your dreams, whatever you wanted. And of course, like most things, when you get something for free or unpaid for that maybe you didn't work for or earn, sometimes there's a price to pay. And price is pretty heavy in Needful Things. If you haven't read the book or seen the movie, I know you'd really enjoy it. If you're into the horror genre, and you should be, check out Needful Things. I think the movie follows the novel pretty fairly. Unlike some of Stephen King movies, where things are a little different in the movies, this one was pretty close and pretty faithful to the novel. We'll be right back after this message.
Hello, boys and girls. It's me, the Frito Bandito. You know what I heard about you? I heard you want to be a Frito Bandito like me. You do? Then you must sing the Bandito song. Let's sing together. You just follow the bouncing Fritos corn chips bag. Ay, 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 ay. I am the Frito Bandito, hey! I like Fritos corn chips, I love them, I do. I want Fritos corn chips, I'll get them from you. Ay, 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 ay. Oh, I am the Frito Bandito. Give me Fritos corn chips and I'll be your friend. The Frito Bandito, you must not offend. Now, boys and girls, you are Frito Bandidos too. You sing the Frito Bandito song, and you loco for crunchy Fritos corn chips.
That's nice.
Munch, munch, munchy bunchy Fritos corn chips. Munchy bunchy Fritos corn chips.
That was Mel Blanc as the Frito Bandito, a character that was sort of booted off of television. Some people found the character very offensive. But he was very popular in the 60s. I remember watching the commercials, and like anything else, there were toys and gimmicks. I still have a couple of Frito Bandito erasers. That's right. They had Frito Bandito erasers for your pencil. And they were huge and bulky, but they were fun to have. Frito Banditos. Another thing that I find real interesting from that era, not exactly movie-related, but cool and weird, if you are listening on the internet and you're logged into Blog Talk Radio, you can see the pictures that I put together, posters from films that are relevant to our topic today. But you'll also see something called flying things. And I had a bunch of these when I was a kid. And flying things were fun. They were a little package you bought for, I don't know, it was probably under a quarter back then. And basically it was a glider toy. They were made out of styrofoam. They had art on them. They had a body section, a front wing section, a rear wing section, and a tail. And it was slotted, and you put the thing together. There was a paper clip to weight the nose, or I'm sorry, a plastic clip to weight the nose of these things. And they were really cool, and many of them were weird and creepy, like a great number of toys were in the 60s. It was a lot of fun, but flying things. There are companies that remake them if you're interested. Search them out on the internet. I recently found a collectible store here in the Cleveland area, and they were selling these. They're not quite original, but they're pretty authentic, pretty faithful remakes, and I bought a couple of them. I used to love the Flying Monster, the Yek, I believe they called it, Y-E-C-C-H, the Yek. He was a creepy gremlin-looking thing. But they were fun, and they really flew. I mean, they glided very, very well. Flying things. Well, there's a topic I've been wanting to talk about here for a while that fits right in. I mentioned it last night, and before I get into it, last night was a great deal of fun. Folks, you got to join us on Fridays at 7:30 Eastern. We have Old Time Radio, and I am hosting along with my co-host, Dave Binkley from Weirdness Really Bad Movies. Now, he's a real audiophile, as is a couple of our regular guests on the show. David is very knowledgeable, and it's really weird for some reason when I have this show here. It was recently under another name. I always seem to have a co-host with a great deal of knowledge about the genre, for which I'm grateful for. Makes it a lot easier to roll along here. But a lot of nice, fun people and join us. King Charles I, as he calls himself, also a huge audiophile. And in fact, he's a few minutes, let's say, older than myself and remembers listening to some of the latter parts of the radio shows personally. And it's always interesting to hear his insights and friend Gar the Ghoul, blah, blah. Also a regular guest. So it seems every week, Friday at 7:30. So listen to Old Time Radio here on Blog Talk. So I mentioned last night, as I said, that there's a topic I've been wanting to talk about for a while. I've been watching in secret on Netflix a really, really exciting show called Stranger Things. Now, they've already wrapped up their first season. There's, I believe it's 8 episodes. If you have Netflix, by gosh, check it out. The show is... It's set in the early 80s, I believe 1983, and they really, really capture the feel. First of all, the synthesized music for the theme really takes you back. But in addition, the way the show is put together, the continuity girl is working overtime because there are a lot of... props and the posters on the wall, everything very reminiscent of the period. In fact, in Stranger Things, in one scene, one of the kids has a poster of the 1980s version of the thing on the wall. It's really, really cool. But it's a neat show. A young boy disappears. His mother, a police chief, and his friends, a group of young kids, teens or preteens, it's an adventurous story. It feels a little bit like The Goonies. It feels almost like a Spielberg movie. But yet, in another way, it feels like a John Carpenter movie, the synthesizer. Boy, I got a real speech impediment today. Please forgive me, folks. Rented lips. I'm tripping over my tongue for some reason. Maybe it's a fallout from all the Moscato yesterday. I'm not sure. But the film, or rather the show, is very reminiscent of, I would have to believe that the filmmakers, the Duffer brothers, Matt and Ross Duffer, the creators, they had to have been influenced, but yet it doesn't feel like a ripoff. If nothing else, an homage, but I don't think that's the intent at all because the story is very, very original. The mother's played by Winona Ryder. There's a quirky gal. Check out the interviews they have on YouTube with her at the SAG Awards. The cast won an award. And David Harbour, who plays the police chief, Had a pretty rousing speech. Unfortunately, it was politically charged, so I'd rather not get into that part. But it was exciting seeing this, the cast all together. The boy who played Mike, who disappeared. A young girl called 11. Very interesting character. I'm not going to play spoiler here today, but a very lovable character, I think. As is the young man who plays Dustin in the movie. Also kind of a lovable character with a very interesting look. He's just a neat kid. And all the kids, there's even a flavor of Stand By Me and It, the way the kids play together, which I think causes me to think it has a Stephen King feel to it. So it's... has elements of the supernatural. It has elements of science fiction, elements of horror for sure. They're well written and well acted. I really highly recommend Stranger Things. You need to see this series, and that's on Netflix. So don't be afraid to check it out.
Men who know tobacco best. It's Lucky's 2-to-1. LSMFT. LSMFT.
You said it.
Lucky Strike means fine tobacco, so round, so firm, so fully packed. So free and easy on the draw.
If that doesn't make you want to run out and buy a pack of Luckies, I don't know what will. It's funny, the commercials of the period, not only was advertising for tobacco products legal then, but some of the ads from the 50s actually show doctors recommend such and such brand over another. It's kind of interesting. And those can be found on YouTube, and you'll hear some of them here on Erie House Radio. So what's your favorite movie about things? Well, call me at 646-378-0264 if and you like. Welcome guest 779 into the chat room, joining us with Evil Annie Ruppert as we talk things over. We're just going over a few things. There are things you'd like to know. I know another good one that I haven't seen it in a long, long, long time with Rosie Grier and Ray Milland, called The Thing with Two Heads. Yeah, another one of those low-budget two-headed monster films, but it was pretty neat. It was interesting to have the African-American and Caucasian fella as each one of the heads in the movie. And it's a typical 70s fodder. There's got to be a motorcycle scene. And Rosie Grier, in addition to a small amount of acting, most people may not know this, but he was a defensive player for the Los Angeles Rams in the 70s, a very, very good player. And in my heart, the most important thing he ever did was taking down Sirhan Sirhan after shooting Bobby Kennedy in the late 60s, in 1968. It was actually Rosie Grier. He was acting, working as a bodyguard. After the shooting, Rosie Grier beat the crap out of Sirhan Sirhan and helped apprehend him. So, amen to Rosie Grier, a real American hero and an actor in a cheap, cheesy horror film. Yay, Rosie! Keep on keeping on, brother. So The Thing with Two Heads, another good thing movie. The Brain That Wouldn't Die, one of my favorite public domain movies, was also known as The Thing That Wouldn't Die. And in the same vein. There was a film called The Thing That Couldn't Die with yet another disembodied head. That is one I have not seen at all. One of the older films that, for whatever reason, I don't think it's as widely distributed as some other films, or just bad luck or bad timing as a kid. I just never seen that film and have yet to see it as a something resembling an adult, which I fancy myself to be at times. You're listening to Eerie House Radio. If you'd like to call, and I think you have, we've got a caller from the Northeast Ohio area. Hello, caller.
Hello, Dale.
Why, you're not just a caller, are you?
You forgot one of the most important roles that Rosie Grier ever played. On
Which
Daniel
is?
Boone.
Oh, no, I don't recall.
He was a slave on Daniel Boone, who either was freed or kept free. It was a reoccurring role, just like Ed Ames was Chingachgook. He was a semi-regular on the Daniel Boone program.
I did not know that. I did watch the show with Fess Parker, but I was very, very, very young and really was not into media as much as I am today, and did not recall that. So thanks.
And Jimmy Dean was on there as a semi-regular also.
You mean the pork sausage guy?
The pork sausage guy, but he was a singer before he was a pork sausage guy.
Well, yeah, I knew that. I knew that. But I just remember his commercials, and actually his product was rather good. His breakfast
actually, it wasn't. I'm not sure what it still is because, you know, he's bought out several years ago. So
mm-hmm.
I think they kept him as a spokesman for a while, but he wouldn't be a good spokesman now.
No.
Kind
of probably looks like a sausage. No.
Oh,
so what's your favorite thing? Movie.
Yeah, you know what? James Arness probably that one there from the thing, the original The Thing. Not the John Carpenter remake, but the original one.
That's that would be a popular pick among science fiction aficionados and horror films, because again, that one is technically a sci-fi film, but has a lot of elements of horror. I think a lot of people would go with that. I do like the remake. It's one of the few I really, really like. I like it because of the use of practical effects. I think the acting wasn't too bad. I love John Carpenter's music.
Yeah. Okay.
But, the old one has a special place in my heart.
The some of the remakes, I'm kind of torn between War of the Worlds, because, yeah, of course, I love the one from the 50s, but outside of some of the early fiction of War of the Worlds with Tom Cruise, actually, it was probably a lot closer to the H.G. Wells story than the 50s one was.
Absolutely. They had the scene with the ferry boats, which really you didn't have anything like that in the George Pal version. I have to admit, I actually enjoyed the Tom Cruise version. There's some people who absolutely hate it for whatever reason, and haters are going to hate, I guess.
Yeah, it's kind of like I feel about a lot of remakes. Because I did not even watch the remake of The Day the Earth Stood Still, because it was opposite of what The Day the Earth Stood Still stood for, you know?
Yeah, and the changes were so bad, and that one is such a classic. It is one of the ones I hate the most, right up there with Dino De Laurentiis' version of King Kong. Is absolute blasphemy to me. So I don't know, my favorite, it's hard for me to pick. I mean, I do like the new thing. I love the old thing with James Arness.
Yeah.
Not a favorite, but I did enjoy Swamp Thing with Adrienne Barbeau. I was lucky enough to meet her a few years ago.
Barbeau and Escape from New York. You just don't kill Adrienne Barbeau like that. You
No, that's a horrible thing to do. she's married to Carpenter, isn't she?
She is, actually, yes. That's why she was in several of his films.
Yeah. Very nice lady. I met her in person. In fact, I was with, God bless him, before he passed, Jimmy Klenk. And she's very gracious, very willing to talk to people. And it was a thrill meeting her.
Jay Bach, who's one of our occasional cast members on the Weirdness Really Bad movie, he actually for a while was a Hollywood stuntman, something he wanted to do his entire life. And when he graduated from high school, he went out there and did it. And he was in Escape from New York. And he said he also added in the raft that's gets blown up at the very beginning. He's in that raft that gets blown up, so he's wiped out pretty quick. But he was in a handful of movies, mostly as doubles. Did a lot of TV stuff, especially for Michael Landon as well with some of his shows. And but he also agreed that Adrienne Barbeau was really really nice person.
Yep. Now, earlier, but just before you called, I was talking about the Netflix show Stranger Things. Have you seen it yet?
I don't have Netflix, so the answer would be no, I have not.
Okay. Well, if you get the opportunity to see it, I don't know if they're going to put it out anywhere besides their own channel.
Probably not until it's gone through its entire run.
Yeah.
But I can tell you, they made some decent money, you know, being a content provider. But when they started making, they really started making money because then more people would subscribe for the stuff they were doing. Isn't the Kevin Spacey show on there?
I think so. I'm not a real viewer of that, so I
and the Orange is the New Black. The Orange and the New Black is theirs too, I think.
That's the Netflix, yeah.
They're providing very quality entertainment. So instead of just going there to get everybody else's shows, they're going there because that's the only place you can see some of these shows. And I'm one of the few people that have as many devices as I have. It doesn't have Netflix.
Yeah. I'll tell you, the network's got to be quaking in their boots when you have AMC having blockbuster hits like Mad Men, like Breaking Bad, like Walking Dead. You know what I mean? And Netflix putting out very successful shows like Orange is the New Black, like Stranger Things.
And Amazon has put out some pretty quality things. And for them to qualify for the Emmys, remember they used to have the ACE Awards for cable because the cable was so small that they got graded on a different scale than the networks.
Mm-hmm.
And now, because they actually have less restrictions than what the networks have, they can get away with more.
That's the thing is I think the sponsors don't have the control they used to over network programming. And I don't think these other venues have those types of restrictions.
Right. Because they're content made by the network themselves, not based on necessarily on the advertisers and what needs to be done, because they're not open air wave channels, also has less restrictions on them as well. The same thing you can say on Comedy Central gets bleeped out, you know, on broadcast television. What you saw when Lewis Black visited the Late Show last week, you know.
Such a funny man. He is such a funny man.
He is, but boy, I tell you what, I'm surprised he hasn't had 15 strokes by now.
I know. It's funny that you said that because I was about to mention, I'm just waiting for him to have an aneurysm or something on stage. But that, I think, is his character where he's just so frustrated that he's ready to have a...
He certainly finds things to get frustrated about and says it them in very funny, funny ways. So it's... But that's just kind of an example of what you can do even on cable. And these guys, Amazon Prime making things and Netflix making things, they're content providers, but they're also content makers now. and they have a lot more freedom than any network ever had, which is why actually Fox and CBS more than once is actually threatened to leave the open air networks, go to cable, and make their programs bought instead of that. And then what are your local channels going to be doing? That's the crazy thing.
Well, and I think it's a natural progression, because if you think about it, if you go back in the old days, when whether you're talking about old-time radio, like you and I host on every Friday, 7:30 here on Erie House Radio.
Nice plug.
You know, if Lux Soap, if Ajax, if Timex didn't like what you were doing, it wasn't going on.
Well, that's true. They could stop it. But again, the cost was such that of the programs that they bought, they actually owned, in a sense, the program.
Right.
And they, that's why they could, but the programs are so expensive today. When I look at something like even network things, like what Timeless is doing, you know, some shows didn't make it simply because it was so expensive to go to a different time period and do that same time period week after week after week after week. But Timeless goes to a different time period every stinking week. And you think, and they have some other special effects going on there. I don't know how NBC can afford that. I'm surprised it got renewed for this second half of the season, and I would be shocked if it got picked up again, not because it isn't a good program, but because of the cost of the program. Dan O'Shannon, we meet him every year up at the Gulardi Fest. He is a writer. You see him on credits on Frasier, on Newhart. He was executive producer for Modern Family for the first, I think, 4 years it was on. He was the executive producer, and CBS asked him to recreate The Odd Couple. He was executive producer now. You know, he's a consulting producer. He still does a lot of writing and things. But CBS asked him to produce, they bought the rights to an Australian series. And he wrote that, and that was the year before I talked to him, and he was looking forward to doing this. He hadn't had the script yet, but during that time, during that year, he wrote the script, he got the pilot made, and it was just, it was a simple one-camera shoot where they had to cast, but they went to a lot of different places, said it came out absolutely fabulous, the network loved it, and said, we can't do it, simply because the cost was way too much. They paid for the pilot. As far as I know, he doesn't even have a copy of it. He said, but he was so glad he got to make that pilot. So it really turned out great. The cast was perfect, everything. But it was just way too expensive for CBS to take on. That's something that perhaps he should try and take to one of these other networks or something.
If he's got a quality product there and a good pilot to use to hopefully he can sell it out there. I think when you don't have the sponsor's control, I think one of the reasons we're getting such quality shows in these other venues is the creative freedoms that the show producers and the directors and even the actors and the script writers have with their material.
Well, when was the last time an NBC president had been a programmer that made independent programming? I mean, Fred Silverman? I'm not sure, because that's why you get so many remakes and things. They just want something that people are already familiar with. And that's why you get so much the same garbage over and over and over again. And sometimes it's so close to what another show is, you could slap the same name on it. And especially when one sitcom becomes it, then there's four other sitcoms that look exactly like it, and one may stick around for a while and the others die off. But it's unfortunately that's what happens, because studios and networks, especially not as much the Netflix, the Amazons, the HBOs, they give people more room to be creative. The networks don't. They want you to
agree.
They want you to be more of the same.
Yeah, be in the main line. Be in the mainstream. And I think that ties people's hands creatively. Even if you look back when Fox first started, in the early 90s, late 80s, actually. Shows that were hugely successful came out of Fox. The Simpsons originally was on Fox. Married with Children was a powerhouse.
Were originally part of the Tracy Ullman show. They were shorts in the Tracy Ullman show.
Yeah, they were a short feature with artist Dave Groening's work, and it became so popular that they eventually had a series. Yep, I remember watching that on Tracy Ullman.
Yeah, and Inside Herman's Head. I thought that was a fun show. They've done some things, and even a recent animated movie, you know, something like that, where Lewis Black actually played Anger. We had people inside.
Gee, what a shock.
Yeah, but you know, whenever they got together, whenever some situation came up, all these people inside his head, and you saw them, you know, as they were thinking and doing out the different things, and that's how he reacted, is the way that they were doing it. Even that puppet thing that Sam Kinison did on Fox early.
Yeah.
And Sam Kinison wasn't a clean guy. He was there on Fox, but he's not a clean guy.
No.
And I love that George Carlin series. They didn't renew it after a second season, or maybe George Carlin walked away from it. But I thought that was very well done. So you're right. The early years of Fox did try a lot of different things because they had to break in.
Yeah. Yeah, they stretched some boundaries. You know, the Married with Children is one of my favorite shows ever. It broke so many boundaries and stretched the limits of good taste. And people, of course, some people, you know, didn't understand the comedy and were very offended by Al Bundy's character and not realize in a way, it had some similarities with All in the Family in that, you know, these people are so ridiculous. You know, we're not making heroes out of them. We're showing why they're wrong.
Right.
You know, with Archie's prejudices, you know, they're showing, you know, he's a human being inside. He was still a good human being in some ways as far as his family and things like that.
Right.
But just short-sighted when it came to being open towards, you know, people who were different from himself. So, in the same way, Al Bundy was an irascible shoe salesman.
Yeah. His glory
made
days
fun of some things that maybe he shouldn't.
Glory days, senior year in high school. A single football game was his glory days.
Yes, his high school days.
Yeah.
Well, Dave, we have a public service announcement.
This is your brain. This is your brain on drugs. This is your brain being chopped to bits by a finely honed meat cleaver. This is your brain in a blender. And this is your brain being stirred into a big pot of chili. Mmm. Brains. Real food for real people.
Real zombies.
I was wondering what happened to my brain. Thanks for playing it, Dale.
Oh, hey. Again, it's a public service, so no problem. Just trying to liven things up around. So, a lot of fun last night. Wow.
Yeah, I tell you what, if whoever listening in on the recorded podcast, or because I think we're not sure whether we've seen Annie there or not, but boy, you ought to tune in Friday nights. We play an old radio program, but we chat around it and give a little bit of information. But I like to say we have some facts, some fun, and a old radio program to boot. You know, it's a heck of a lot of fun. Boy, it was lively last night.
It was lively, and I hate to tell you, I look back at the numbers, and you'd be shocked. There were quite a few people who went back and listened to that show.
I also do my best to promote it, and I hand
Thank
it
you.
Out because was. It is a very, I think it's a very fun hour plus. It's a fun hour,
yeah.
And even you know, after the hour, and you have the unexpurgated version, and it just goes on and on.
Yeah. Well, interesting people, interesting conversations. You know, Gar and King Charles join us, so they always put their interesting spins and bring up some great topics and great questions about these old shows. And Appreciate your lending your expertise as a co-host because, you know, it's a discovery I'm sure for many of our listeners, and it is for me as well. So it's fun to learn about these, the people who played them, how they were put together, the period they played in, the areas of the country they played in. It's neat.
Yeah, it's a blast for me too, because not only do I get to share what I do know, but I'm always trying to prepare extra things. So I always am finding out more things than what I had known to add to some of the knowledge. And to be frank with you, until you started going that direction with the old radio programs, I didn't know that any of that information was ever going to be useful again. So I really hadn't delved into it a whole lot as of late until you piqued my interest back in the love of old radio that I've always had.
I guess one of my junior high school teachers was right. No knowledge is wasted. Sooner or later, it comes in handy. It's a medium, really. I don't want to see go away. It precedes me, quite frankly. You know, I was very, very young when it was dying out in the early 60s. There were still a few shows running out there. But it is so much fun to imagine what life was like. You know, all you had was your radio in the family room. You know, people didn't have televisions. I think that explosion happened more in the 50s of, you know, a TV in every home.
Yeah.
And that was your family entertainment.
Well, and it was something for some others, because I know that I was talking to one of my coworkers, and she asked her father-in-law if he loved the radio, because he's loving television. She, if he loved the radio, he says no, because he kind of grew up down in the Appalachians. He says, and the reception was so terrible for the radio, usually you couldn't get anything. So even those that grew up in the great radio era, a lot of those people still couldn't get it. That was really reserved for a lot of things. And we talked about a little bit about the some of the different networks last night, and NBC being the first one, then about three quarters of a year later, they kicked off their second network, the Blue, and then CBS came a half year after that, then to find out that NBC Radio no longer existed, sold out to Westward 1 year ago, and CBS is looking at a way to divest itself of the radio network, and I'm thinking Mutual is still there, and ABC might be there, but neither one is really providing programs. Your Westwood and your NPR affiliates are really a majority of your outside of some, and it may be Westwood that does, because they do a lot of sports, so the Westwood may be the ones doing some of the sports you're hearing that isn't the local sports. It's just, it is, when you love radio, it's hard to see what has happened to radio, which is why I'm so enamored with what the internet is doing, making all the old radio programs available and making them and giving people like us and others a chance to talk and describe about these things and to experience it for themselves. And like you said, down the road, we may, you know, I've got some full half hour broadcast radio plays that I produced. I'd love to share with you. And we talked about doing some ourselves. Dale, when you do that, you'll salivate because of listening to these and then making your own. It's really, really, really an exciting thing when you love the media as I do and as you are.
You shared some of the shows that you'd made previously, and I promise you that we will do at least a couple of these. If not on the Friday night show, maybe we could do a Sunday special, or if I don't have a guest or a topic right here Saturday, like we're doing now, talking about things. And this is a thing that's kind of really become very fun for, I think, both of us for the last few weeks.
I think Gar the Ghoul also is, and although he's crazy, he loves radio. He found radio during the 70s and 80s during the CBS Radio Mystery Theater era. And you could tell there's a lot of things he knows that he brings right up, and he catches a lot of things. When were talking about the program last night, he goes, cue the oboe, which was kind of the opening for the show. He kept saying, cue the oboe.
Yeah.
So he's very good at catching things. And of course, he brings a moral to the story at the end, which is a little nonsensical, but a heck of a lot of fun. So
yeah. Yeah, I told him he needs to start documenting those. One of these days we'll read off a list when we have like 30, 40 of them.
We do a top 10 gar list there.
Morals,
you know?
Yeah. It's like the wheel of morality on the Animaniacs.
There you go.
Wheel of morality, turn, turn, turn. Tell us the lesson that we must learn. And then they had a ridiculous moral, very much like Gar's. Very funny stuff.
There's written out, and his is off the top of the head. So, but
he's a very quick wit and a funny guy. Jeez,
he is very funny. And I had known of him a little bit, but didn't truly get to know him until we started doing this. And I started chatting back and forth with him and stuff. And a very genuine and very funny and very spontaneous person. Dale, do not give him coffee.
Oh, come on. It would be fun to watch. He's so hyped up all on his own. It would just be fun to watch. Could be dangerous, though, I guess.
Internet could implode if you do that.
We broke the internet. We put Gar on coffee. Run for your lives. Oh, my.
Yep.
Yeah, things. You know, I'm sure you've seen both the Addams Family movie and you're familiar with the original show, right?
Right, absolutely.
I didn't like the thing in the movies. Sure, it's great to have CGI and have that hand running all over everywhere.
Yeah,
but
I
like him limited to the box because he would show up at any box. And wherever that box was in the house, thing was popping out of there.
Was popping out. You know what? I remember how generational, the many generations this crosses. We were in Aldi's once, and I was in there reaching for a gallon of milk, and his hand comes and pushes it down, and my son, who was probably about 11 years old at the time, he said, "Thank you, thing," you know.
That's awesome. And quick thinking.
Oh, my goodness. So, you know, it's just, and matter of fact, I've used that a couple of times when I've done this thing called a weirdness really bad phone call. I have a hand that just shows up right there, and he and I are usually fighting over the book or something like that, arm wrestling or something like that. It's a crazy bit of fun with homage back to some of these great shows like that. Yeah, that could be one of my favorite things, too. But look at all the things he had there. Cousin It was a thing.
Yeah,
and,
he was.
And
if I don't get my hair cut soon, I'm going to resemble him.
That's what my wife was telling me, too. She said, get a haircut or a dog license. You only have to get a dog license once a year, though, Dale, you know?
Oh, yeah, I might just go for that. In lieu of a driver's license. Instead of renewing that, I'll just get a dog license for myself.
There you go. All week was out.
Boy, if I could do some things dogs can do, I'd never leave the house, but I digress. Yeah.
You're not on Netflix. You can't say those things.
That's right. And besides, I have a filter. This is intended to be, like, appropriate for 13 and up, so we're not going to go too far in the blue direction. And since we like retro things here, let's hear one more retro commercial right now.
What walks downstairs alone or in pairs and makes a slinkity sound? A spring, a marvelous thing. Everyone knows it's Slinky. It gives a big lift when wrapped as a gift, a very likable toy. It's falling in place, brings smiles to your face, something kids can enjoy. It's Slinky, for fun it's a wonderful toy. It's Slinky, it's fun for a girl and a boy. And Slinky Mobiles with big Slinky wheels and pistons that move as you go. It makes a great sound when you pull it around. The driver's an old-timey fellow. A slinky dog, a slinky train, many more wonderful toys. You tug the string, they do their thing. They're great for girls and boys. They're slinkies, really wonderful toys. They're slinkies, they're fun for girls and boys.
Were you ever able to get your slinky to go downstairs?
No, we couldn't afford a new one, so I always had just a slink. We couldn't afford a slinky. So, no, mine never went down the stairs.
Yeah, they were a little harder to use than advertised on TV. But
I think almost everything is harder to use than is advertised on TV.
Absolutely. I.e. cell phones, i.e.
everything. Another one of my favorite things is The Thing by Phil Harris.
That's a fun song. You know I'm a fan of old Dr. Demento.
Yes. Oh, yes.
I've heard the song. I, you know, have a digital copy for my own enjoyment on my computer. And when I first heard it, I really didn't know who Phil Harris was. And later learned not only was he Baloo the Bear in The Jungle Book, but the band leader for – I love him as Jack Benny's band leader.
Absolutely. And what you'll get is you get more into the 50s as you're collecting radio programs. A program you really have to dig into, Dale, is the Phil Harris Alice Faye Show. It is just so absolutely crazy. Things you could never, ever do on television, they were doing on radio. Him and Frankie Ramlee on the Jack Benny Show, they always talked about Frankie Ramlee, but he usually wasn't there, and he didn't have a voice. Elliot Lewis, actually, who was a director, producer, actor throughout their the era of television, the Voyage of the Scarlet Queen, he starred in that. He did a lot of suspenses, and then for a while he was producing and directing suspenses. He played his comedy character, Frankie Ramlee, in the Phil Harris Alice Faye Show. Walter Tetley, who was on Great Gildersleeve, he was Leroy, and a lot of other obnoxious kid characters. He was Julius in this. And I tell you what,
he was my favorite obnoxious kid character.
Yeah. In this one episode, just to kind of give you an example, is that he was showing off Alice's wedding ring to Frankie, and Frankie dropped it down the kitchen sink. And before you know it, they were trying to get it out, but before you know it, the whole kitchen sink was flooded, and they were diving in to try and – it was just something you can never do on television. But it was just crazy enough that you'd believe it with Phil Harris and Frankie Ramlee. It just
I think on the Jack Benny Show they started, like, sort of painting the band characters, including Ramlee. And as you said, with the with him and his wife's show, they brought out the band members more. What kind of reprobates they were!
Oh, and they did. We're doing the other show at the same time. He wasn't using his band on his show, but he was using his band on Jack Benny's show, and he was appearing at the same time, actually usually on the same night as the Jack Benny show. And while they were on NBC, it wasn't a problem. But when Jack Benny moved to CBS, that's why we kind of ended up with Bob Crosby and the Bobcats, because it was just too much hassle for Phil to leave NBC at his studio and get over to Jack Benny's studio on time. So it was.
I know
the
we're
more
kinda...
useless trivia for you.
No. It's never useless. There's so many fun things. As you brought these shows up, I was thinking of others that I heard when I had satellite radio in my car. I loved, you got to help me out. It was I think it was called Archie's Place, about a bar. Duffy's Tavern.
Duffy's Tavern. Where the elite meet to eat. No,
yes.
Duffy ain't here.
the gentleman who played the main character.
Ed Archie Gardner was the original character. He had a routine with kind of a stand-up routine with a double-headed baseball player. I'll have to see if I can find that sometime. Sure, it's just absolutely hilarious. And he was, you know, perfect for double-headers, and you know, he's the only guy that could look at first base and third base at the same time, and things like that.
Kind of a Janus head.
You know who the original Miss Duffy was in that series?
No.
Shirley Booth.
You're kidding.
Who went on to be Hazel and many other things.
Yeah.
But she, and matter of fact, they were married. He was quite the philanderer, and she wasn't real fond of that. She came home to him with a bunch of girls naked in their swimming pool, and she was pretty much done with that, and another gal came on.
Yeah, for some reason, women don't like that a whole lot.
I don't understand.
Yeah. Always perplexed by that attitude.
Yeah, I tell you.
No, I like his character. It seems to me I've heard his voice in film, and he played like gangster characters sometimes, or like the comical sidekick of a gangster.
Ed Archie Gardner. I'm not sure how many films he did. I know that he did a wonderful episode of Alfred Hitchcock Presents, that one and a half hour one.
Ooh.
I see him in that. And he did also bring Duffy's Tavern to television. And when he did Duffy's Tavern on radio towards the end, he actually took it out of the country so he wouldn't have to pay taxes on it. Where they found the audience from that understood English, I didn't know. But somewhere down in the Bahamas where there was where he wouldn't have to pay taxes or anything.
Darn.
So.
It's funny, too, because even those variety shows would have some of the great guest stars, including people like Vincent Price and others. They just a lot of fun. And again, it's going to be fun here every Friday, rediscovering a new show.
Absolutely.
Well, we got maybe like 2.5 minutes left to go on in the regular time here. Is there where can we see Weirdness Really Bad Movie next?
It'll be on Vortex this next upcoming week. Our own edition of the House on Haunted Hill, and we did filmed that from the Haunted Schoolhouse and Laboratory in Akron, Ohio. Probably the closest thing I'll ever get to a soundstage.
That's cool. And there's some goof on this Wednesday night, I believe, at 9 o'clock on Wednesday. Dale Kay's Book Show.
World. I'm gonna have to tune into the Vortex at horrorhost.net on Wednesday.
Yeah, it's just some guy. I don't know. He's a guy.
But he's got a cool hat.
And that hat, I will always treasure. That was given to me by Jimmy Clank, who passed away a little more than a year ago today. I told him I couldn't take it as a gift, and I gave him a couple bucks for it. I'm like, hey, I can't take this for nothing. Come on. He's like, and you know how Jimmy was. He was just a generous giving. Soul, and I'll always treasure that hat.
Absolutely.
And a few props that I... Go ahead.
I just say, and the memories that come with it.
Yeah, including a few props that he made for Spook Show, too. I have a couple of them survived mayhem and things that go awry sometimes on stage. Thank you, Evil Andy Ruppert, for listening both last night and tonight. Hope you enjoyed our things, our discussion about things, just things.
What kinds of things?
I'm sorry?
All kinds of things, yes.
Yes, all kinds of things. And we hope your things are going good in your life as you listen every weekend to Eerie House Radio. And we got about, 20 seconds or so left. So go out there and see a Thing movie. Be it The Thing, be it Things to Come, Needful Things, or Netflix great show Stranger Things. I really, really am a fan of that film. Go series. Go see it on Netflix. Go visit a friend who has Netflix and watch it. See you next week here on Treehouse. Bye-bye. Ta-da. Killed another hour.
There you go.
Well, thanks for dropping by.
Hey, no problem. I was trying to get a lot of things caught up here, and I'm getting in that direction. And I got to get back to doing some writing again. I'm gonna try and film four. I'm gonna try and film four shows at one time, Dale.
Wow, that is an undertaking.
Well, what it is we're gonna actually use the same. We're gonna do a green screen. I'm gonna do it with Holly because we've kind of done this with the hour-long shows we've done before, where we've done five of the one-hour shows, all the hosting bits for that in one sitting.
Mm-hmm.
And so I picked out a bunch of jungle movies, and I have different jungle backgrounds. We'd have to wear the same outfit because, and we do one standard clothes, but of course you'd have a different background behind that each time as well. And so
great.
It'd look a little bit different, and of course the credits would be different. And
too bad Jungle Larry wasn't.
Yeah,
too bad Jungle Larry wasn't still with us.
Yeah, well, it's a shame I don't have anything with Jungle Bob. If I ever do this again, go to the jungle again, then I'll get a chance to time to get together with Jungle Bob. He's very good at working with a lot of us.
Did I ever tell you I met Safari Jane?
No.
Safari
Jane. Not familiar with Safari Jane.
Safari Jane was married to Jungle Larry.
Oh, I did not know that.
And,
okay.
Yeah, and she helped him out with his show at Cedar Point, which is, for if you're a listener and you're not from Northeast Ohio, Cedar Point is a very popular, very well-known amusement park up here. And during the 60s and 70s, Jungle Larry had a show, and he brought his wild animals and talked about them, shared stories about them with, you know, and it was kind of a kids/family-type presentation. Sometimes we'd get kids involved in the show. Well, in any event, about 25 years ago, it was only a couple years after I got married, and my wife and I loved love all kinds of animals, as you know. And
yep,
I don't know if you know this or not, but in my life, I've had a couple of green iguanas. They get pretty big. I built this cage. It was 4 foot by 4 foot by 5 foot tall. Had a big post in the center, and I built little ledges on him so he could lay there and bask under his light. They were relatively tame, but one of them surely did not like being put on a leash. There was a horror story there where I lost a lot of blood. They don't have big teeth, but they have sharp teeth, very sharp teeth.
And they have a wicked tail.
Yeah, I used to play catch with one of them. I would throw a balloon at him, and he would swat it with his tail back at me, and I'd pat it back at him, and we'd play catch for a while.
Wow.
Till the balloon caught one of his spikes and popped, and it would scare the crap out of him. But
I could understand that.
In any event, these were beloved pets, and we wanted to treat them the best way we could and give them the best environment and keep them happy and healthy. So anyway, Denise is Mrs. K, and she was a huge fan of Jungle Larry, so we went to Cedar Point. This would have to be around 1991, and Safari Jane was still alive and still had an office. I don't know if she was still doing live shows there. I don't recall, but somehow we got permission to visit her in her office, and she sat down and told us some wonderful stories about her life with Jungle Larry, and they had iguanas, and some of these green iguanas, they'll get as long as 6 feet long. Now that sounds really, really huge, but they're a thin, light animal. Being you know that birds are descendants from reptiles, they don't have the smaller ones don't have really heavy bones, heavier than a bird, but not heavier heavy bones like maybe an animal, a mammal of comparable size, but. And two-thirds of their length is tail, so their bodies aren't that big, but still and yet pretty chunky. And she told some nice stories about actually taking these iguanas out for walks. And there were two of them, and the male would always like to find a rock to you know, get up as high as he could and survey the land for everybody for their little excursions through the woods. And
yeah.
I thought that was very charming and would be just absolutely hilarious to see someone walking their iguana.
Yeah.
But they're
a friend, they're pretty smart
for a lower order animal. They recognize
smart
their
enough.
Owners.
No, he didn't want
If you want an exotic pet, a green iguana is a safe bet. They're relatively tame. They got to be really agitated to bite you, and I got a little over aggressive with trying to put a leash on one of them, and he got ticked off at me.
You're telling me an iguana is a little safer than, say, a rhinoceros?
Well, yeah, just slightly.
just checking. I was thinking again.
No, but I mean it's safe for them too. They can live for quite some time. People have had them for as long as 30 years in captivity. That's a long time to have any kind of an animal.
That's true. That guy's longer than a lot of
can...
Americans.
Yeah. Yeah, wishful thinking. But, no. I'm kidding. I'm waxing nostalgic. Ah, to be a disc jockey again. That was some fun times. Boy, talking about being free with your creativity, I mean, I had no filter back then. None.
None, huh? Well, you weren't on network television, so you could be.
Well, and I looked at it this way. You got to be 21 to come in here and drink, so, you know, you got to be an adult, number one.
No.
Number two, I made it my business to never say it, just explain it. In other words, use a great deal of innuendo rather than dropping F-bombs or using...
To be honest with you, that innuendo and figuring out yourself is funnier than just throwing it out there like that.
I mean, shock value is fine every once and again, but there's, you know, I never really was enamored of anybody like Howard Stern.
No.
Not to say that he's not talented or successful. He's most certainly successful, but I personally got bored with him very, very quickly.
Right. Well, and that's it. When you say that, and you say it as often as, you know, it's just that, he would pick something to be provocative about for the week, and before the week's end was over, you know, you were so tired of that. And because he, again, not just because of what he said, but the fact he said it over and over and over again, actually it became boring. It wasn't provocative, it was boring.
There's only so funny a boy part or a girl part can be, you know what I mean? It's a,
right.
Yeah.
But
in a way, it felt like a...
Working around it, it's a lot, it can be a lot more fun and a lot funnier. And it takes a lot more work, it does. You know, anybody can get up there and say F this and F that. But to work your way around it creatively and still be funny with it, it makes it funnier than saying F this and F that.
Yeah. You know who was really good at that? Was Benny Hill.
Yes. He went right to the border, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
And
He was so good at painting the picture without coming right out and saying it.
Yep. Very good at doing that pantomime sketches and running and all that stuff that he did.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of British humor. I've always liked Monty Python, and I do miss the original Benny Hill show. Those were absolutely fantastic. He was a poet. He was a songwriter. He was many things, and a funny guy.
For a while, the antenna TV was playing that. I no longer get that. They have their broadcast, their digital broadcast, so low that I can't get that at my house. Your local
not even on an antenna.
Not even on an antenna. And I've got a rotor antenna here, and I can't get. What I can pull in, when I pull in the Super Bowl tomorrow, I'll be pulling it off the Fox station in Youngstown because I get that one. But I can't get
the
one. So,
there must be less interference for the antenna signal.
It's just a stronger, they send out a stronger signal. I think Fox doesn't want you to do that. I think Fox wants you to have to go to your cable company. I watch more straight up than I do off my cable.
I remember there were times, and you remember the days when that's all you had was an antenna, there, the pre-cable days.
Yeah, I know
and,
that when we lived in Louisville, we had one old black and white TV that could actually pick up this day's West Virginia channel.
Hmm.
I was about to share,
there were times you could pick up things from Detroit here, both on radio and television, with the old antennas. Depending on weather conditions and things like that.
That's pretty good. Pretty good.
I remember in the 60s there was a good oldies station coming out of Detroit, and I think
CKLW.
It was, yes,
that
that's
the one?
The one, CKLW.
Yeah.
They had a powerful signal, and I think what people don't realize too, and this was the issue with old time radio, is it was all AM back then. It was all AM broadcasting. FM has a shorter wavelength and therefore can pierce through certain atmospheric things. And I think the way that the signal bounces is a lot more favorable for long-distance broadcasting with FM.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
The old radio shows didn't have it, which speaks to what you mentioned earlier, how a great deal of the people just in the country, if you were out in the sticks, maybe you weren't getting any radio at all.
Well, on the other hand, you know, again, when we lived in Louisville, we had my dad's big old Zenith, I think it was, radio. It was built in the 30s and also got some short wave bands. But we could even pick up Cincinnati and, upon occasion, if the weather was right, we could pick up New Orleans station.
Yeah. Did you ever own a shortwave radio?
I never did. I know several people who do that, but I've never done that myself.
I had one for a few years when I was younger, and oh my gosh, it was so much fun picking things up from other countries and other cities. I remember being fascinated. I was a huge fan of the old Fantastic Four cartoon show from the 60s when Marvel was doing, you know, a number of shows in addition to the Spider-Man show from the 60s. And I missed it so much. And you could actually pick up TV stations on shortwave. And I picked up a television station, and I was sitting there trying to imagine, you know, the scenes that I recalled from these old Fantastic Four shows. That was a lot of fun.
And the way that radio has changed as of late, that I think that someplace like Norway, I think it is, I just read it. It was, I'm not sure it's Norway, but it's like Norway around that area. They actually shut down the FM band. They have strictly digital radio there now, and they don't have AM, they don't have FM, and it gives the country a lot more bandwidth of those signals, those frequencies they can sell to cell phone people and other people like that. And digital radio, actually, and again, depending on how much power you boost it with, can be just as, and it is crystal clear, but when you go right out of the boundaries of that, then you have either perfect signal or no signal. But they even closed down the country, closed down its FM band in order to go straight digital audio.
I hope broadcast radio never fully goes away. Being old school, being a fan of science fiction and having read and familiar with all these stories of doom and gloom and whatever, it is quite possible in our lifetime, David, that the grid may go down someday and we're going to need landlines and we're going to need broadcast radio.
Yeah,
we're going to need
true.
It. Until the grid goes back up, should it ever go down, we're going to need that for emergency services, for people to learn where they should go and what they should do in case of emergency.
And that's why your shortwave is so important in the case of emergency situations, hurricanes and tornadoes, and things like that. They have short wavers have been, they're there manning it as long as they can to get information
sure.
in and out of their area.
Sure. I mean,
you're
if
right.
a satellite goes down, if cell towers go down, there's has to be alternate ways to communicate.
That's why in each area you had one station designated a clear channel, 50,000 watt, which meant they were the only ones allowed to be on that one frequency throughout the country. Other stations, because they're not allowed the 50,000 watt, you could, as long as they didn't bump into each other's signal, it was no big deal. But
mm-hmm.
that's why you had one in New Orleans that was 50,000, and one in Cleveland was 50,000, and there may be a couple in New York that's 50,000. There's at least one in New York. I'm sure there's one in Boston, one in Detroit, which was WXYZ. Chicago had to have one, if not two of them. And that's where everybody tells you to go in case of an emergency. That's where you're supposed to go, is to the 50,000-watt station. You're right. If
and
you
that's 1100 AM in Cleveland, WTAM, is 50,000 watts.
Right.
They're the big boys.
Anything happens.
It's a shame they're almost all talk radio now. There's not that there's anything wrong with talk radio, but it seems like that's all there is on radio anymore.
Certainly on AM. There's not as much of that on FM because the quality of the music's better there yet. But even the kids
yes.
today, their radios are their cell phones. But
yes.
I still consider that the next radio device, to be honest with you. It's
well, yeah,
different...
and you've got things like iHeartRadio and other services that facilitate the use of iPads and phones and tablets.
They stream, and there are internet stations that do nothing but internet radio stations.
Yeah.
So
like Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk Radio, exactly.
Yeah. And thankfully we have this here to share with you not only old radio shows, but a show like today where we can pick a topic and talk about things that are related to what is your thing? What's your thing?
Your thing?
Yep.
Yeah. So this is the next radio, and I've listened to Blog Talk Radio actually over my phone as well. You know, I pulled up one of your shows and listened to it on my phone. That, to me, was a really neat thing to be able to do.
Yeah. Yeah, I still live in a cave. I really only use my cell phone for things that are absolutely necessary. I absolutely detest texting. Maybe because I'm lazy and I don't want to train my fingers to learn how to text quickly. But I think I prefer a nice, warm conversation, like we're having now.
I would too, but you know what I found is there are a lot of people I dealt with, even on my show, that
mm-hmm.
would respond immediately to a text but wouldn't pick up their phone.
Yeah.
And
oh, yeah, I mean, people are definitely going that direction. My son is one of those types, usually.
Yeah. So it's and that's what both my sons do that a lot. Mostly my youngest does it more than my oldest, but still, you know, that is the new way of non-communication, I guess.
Yeah.
Communication of non-communicating.
Yeah. Yep, and it's unfortunate in a way. I mean, does it facilitate things for ease and everything? Yeah, absolutely. For short. Meaningless messages, you know, or just short messages to get a brief message across. I think texting is great. But when you want to fully understand somebody and you want to go over things, there's nothing like a good old telephone or better yet, face-to-face conversation.
Right, right.
You even learn so much from body language from people when you're talking to them. But something like
that's
this,
why,
and this is one of the reasons I think I like radio,
yeah.
is you hear so much.
And that's why I even kind of liked, I don't do it much, but I do upon occasion, throw the Skype in there, because you can see my brother when he does it, because he lives in Dallas now, and he feels so much closer to home when he can look behind and see, hey, look, I see Ohio from here, and he feels like a lot closer to home just because he can see it, you know?
Yes.
And there's a lot of technology out there that we... Sorry, Dale, we can't let it leave us behind, buddy. And you're not.
No.
Look what You're on an internet radio program that not only plays live but archives it so that people can listen to it when it's convenient for them, and that's the whole thing that the kids are into now, the convenience, listening to it when they want to listen to it, that kind of a thing.
Yeah, on demand. They love that on demand thing. Well, I think we're just about out of time here in the bonus time after the show. In the next day or so, we'll let everyone know what the next show is on Erie House Radio, old-timey radio shows right here at 7:30 every Friday, Eastern.
Tune in. It'll be fun.
Yes, sir. Well, Dave, we'll see you on Friday.
We'll see you Friday, Dale.
Thanks, listeners. Bye-bye. Thanks for listening to Erie House Radio.